Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. No better way to start a Monday. What's up, brother?
Happy Monday, Andrew.
It is happy indeed. What a great weekend of soccer.
There was a lot on. I felt as if... I was just getting up from the sofa to catch a breath of fresh air before I had to sit down again and watch some more.
We're going to talk about all of these things. Obviously, Manchester United and Liverpool will lead the show in just moments. But then we have so much MLS to discuss. And there's one thing I did want to say about the MLS playoffs before we started. Now, I so enjoyed our interview with Bobby Warshaw last week. He was great.
Yes. But
when I asked about his thoughts on the single elimination format, I felt like I was made to feel like I had just asked the most insignificant who cares question of all time. And I get it because it's not doesn't really have anything to do with the action. The games are more important than formatic changes. However, if you go to like it's like one of the top things being talked about all over the place today is how amazing the format change has turned out to be with single elimination.
I was a little bit shocked by his reaction too because it's
I think he said who cares?
No, I think he said, actually, I don't know. Let's see afterwards. And we left it at that. We left it kind of hanging in the air. But you can't deny that it's been a total success.
Teams are playing with an urgency in these games that I don't know if we really expected coming. I think the thing, and we will get to MLS in more detail, but I just wanted to get to this at the top, that I think the things that people don't take into account is that in MLS games, you are virtually guaranteed of goals. So it's not like a single elimination format in some other leagues means that it's going to be some kind of like nervy nil-nil, let's just get to penalties. Yeah. Like MLS is just the league, say what you want about it. You can criticize the defending, the goalkeeping, whatever. It's chaos on a field. Like you can say all that, but the one thing that you pretty much know is that goals will happen.
Right.
And so sometimes it just takes that one goal to completely change the dynamic of a game. And in a single elimination format, one goal, it sends one team into a tailspin. It sends another one like real. It's just, these games are chaos.
Just before we get off this, Paul Carr, who's an excellent follow because of his stats and knowledge and et cetera, et cetera. MLS playoff games in which each team scored three goals. From 1996 to 2018, two in 326 games. In 2019, two in six games.
I don't know. Maybe it'll turn out to be a one-off. Maybe it just so happened that this weekend was crazy. But I don't know. It seems like a bit of a coincidence that they changed the format to this, and these teams are all just going for it. And it made for awesome viewing.
Yeah, and I also think it engaged the supporters quite a bit too. Like that's the first time I've seen the Philadelphia Stadium full, like completely full.
That's not fair. Then you've just admitted on a national international podcast that you just don't watch them play.
No.
Now, I would say
they've had sellouts in the last few games. I know, but I guess, I suppose that's fair. Maybe I haven't been paying attention enough, but the atmosphere seemed absolutely...
The atmosphere was as good. I'll give you. It's
right.
That was as good as it's ever been there. But they do sell tickets to watch the team play.
The opening season game, it was half full. That's all I'm saying.
We'll talk more about this coming up later on in the podcast. But JJ, let's start with the Premier League. Manchester United and Liverpool 1-1. You were right. Mark Goldbridge was sort of right.
Mm.
I mean, you both said draws, right?
Now, yeah.
You said a 0-0, I think.
Yeah, look.
But either way, your point was well taken.
These are bad games, generally speaking, and they're games that Liverpool do not do well in. Liverpool going into Old Trafford. I don't think we've won in Old Trafford since Brendan Rodgers in the spring of 2014.
Jurgen Klopp has not won there.
Yep.
Four draws, one loss.
Yeah, but I in fairness to Klopp, I would separate him slightly from this. Look at it. We've been to two European Champions League finals in the last 2 years and we still haven't got a win at Old Trafford. And United have been all-time bad. But in the 80s, when United were struggling, it was the same story. Liverpool were the best team in the world at the time. And they'd go into Old Trafford and they might get a nervy win or a draw or they'd be beaten.
You know, Manchester United, it's really interesting. And it kind of plays off of what you're saying about how they perform against Liverpool in these games. I don't know what to make of this idea that their two best games really of the season. I know yesterday wasn't a great game per se, but they got a draw against what had been the most dominant team in the league in Liverpool. And they played well for large stretches. And their other best game of the season was probably the opening week 4-0 over Chelsea. Now, like, I can't decide if these things are good for Solskjaer in that when the opponents are ratcheted up, he seems to have his team at their best, or if it's bad for him that he can't replicate that against lesser opposition.
Yeah,
like, I think the average player doesn't really need to be motivated to play against Liverpool and Chelsea. They need some help against the, you know, the Watfords, the Crystal Palaces, teams like that. And I don't know, for whatever reason, Solskjaer does not seem to be able to get the same sort of motivation out of his guys in those games as he does in these, when you know guys are going to be ready to play.
Yeah, and also there's the Manchester United without the ball. Manchester United were caught Chelsea several times on the break in that opening game. And the goal they scored against Liverpool yesterday was a goal on the break. And the acid test of Solskjaer hasn't been getting up for games like this. It's been Newcastle away.
Right.
You know, it's been Southampton at home.
It's almost like winning these games hurts him.
A little bit. Now, yesterday, there was some tactical changes that at least point to a way forward for United. So playing five across the midfield, playing with wing-backs and three centre-backs, United were, for most of the game, pretty compact, really hard to get at, and Wan-Bissaka and Young found a way to neutralise Liverpool's most creative outlets, which are Trent Alexander-Arnold and Robertson. That was really good. They pressed in the midfield with Pereira, who had a good game. They kind of unsettled Fabinho. Now look, Liverpool played bad. There's no two ways about it. There was no cohesiveness. The front three was lost. When it just goes to show you, Liverpool, when they lose one of those front three, the drop off to Origi is phenomenal. And I'm wondering, was there a better option than to go with Origi? As much as we love him for what he did at the end of last season, and
He has a flair for the dramatic. There's no doubt about that.
I mean, he did nothing yesterday, Andrew. Like nothing.
It is. I was wondering as that game was kind of playing out, and I was thinking about what I was going to say about this on the podcast, and I was wondering if maybe it's time for a little bit of a Mo Salah appreciation week. Because, and I think you get this too from Liverpool fans that you speak with, there is a segment of that fan base that, for whatever reason, is down on him.
Mm.
Whether that's because he hasn't been able to repeat what he did his first year with the club, or because he does, quite frankly, have some annoying tendencies, if you're a fan of that team.
Yeah, but the goals, Andrew.
But the goals and his ability to create something out of nothing is... There's very few players in the league that can do that the way that he can. And
Origi, look at the 1v1s. Origi had, I don't know how many take-ons he had, and he completed none of them. You know, that's just not happening with Salah. Now, will Salah take someone on, try to beat another guy? Doesn't work out. Yeah, but at that point, you've probably got a corner kick or something. And yeah, there's a part of the Liverpool fan base that, you know, most Liverpool fans absolutely love him.
Okay.
But
I would hope so.
No, they absolutely adore him. He's adored, and rightly so. And the little frustrations are just passing things. Mm-hmm. But you're right that it's time to... In the contrast of what Origi brought yesterday versus what Salah brought yesterday, yeah, it's time to appreciate Mo.
I mean, he just attracts attention from a defense that Divock Origi is just not ever going to be able to do in the same way.
Yeah, and also those who... It kind of plays into the hands of the Liverpool fans who really wanted upgrades. They loved what Origi did, but they were, and I'd be one of them, were kind of a bit confused about the new contract that was given to him, based on a longer sample set of his skills. You know, the Barcelona game, brilliant. Newcastle, brilliant. He made good impacts towards the end of the season, but a long-range view of what he's done for Liverpool would suggest that maybe we needed to go in a different direction.
We'll talk about the goals, the goals we'll talk about in a sec, but while we're talking about this, I would say that I still believe Liverpool are the front runners in my mind to go on and win the title. But in seeing Salah not play, like, and in seeing, like you said, the word you use, drop off to the next guy, it does make you wonder a little bit about some of the differences between Liverpool and Manchester City. And these are things that we know, but now you can see them in more of a glaring way, where, like, last year, Manchester City are losing key players left and right. Like Kevin De Bruyne, a guy that I pick every year to be my player of the year. You know, he misses huge portions of the season, and it just doesn't matter. I don't think, you know, Liverpool over the past couple of years have been fairly fortunate in the way the injury bug has not bit them, as opposed to how we've seen it take huge bites out of other clubs, Tottenham, Arsenal, City as well. If that were to happen to Liverpool, like Salah not playing in this game, there are drop-offs with them that you don't see with Manchester City. And I think that, to me, that right now looks to be the only real way that I feel like Liverpool could lose this title, is if injuries do start to pop up and it affects them differently than it affects City.
I think I agree broadly with what you're saying. I would say that yesterday, Keita coming in made a huge difference, and obviously Lallana coming in made a huge difference. But Lallana was a nowhere man last season. Like, Lallana was on the periphery of the squad, and there's a lot of people who would like to have seen him moved on, you know. But he's coming in and making that impact. But you're right, the drop-off between what Jurgen Klopp's preferred 11 would be to what's on the bench to come in and replace them is pretty big.
Yeah. Let's talk about the goals for a second here. Really, for me, it's just a goal that did happen and a goal that didn't. First off, the Rashford goal. Let's sit here like gentlemen that we are. We're friends. We care about one another. Let's not allow this to spiral into some petty debate on VAR. Let's just talk about this like human beings.
We're not going to not talk like human beings.
All right. I worry when we get into the VAR situation. Here's what I'll say about the Rashford goal. For me, it shouldn't have been allowed. I thought that was, you can say, is it a soft foul in the buildup? Maybe. I don't know. The angle that we had on TV wasn't maybe a great one from behind. You couldn't quite see how hard Lindelof kicked the back of Origi. But if you believe that Lindelof kicked Origi, I don't care how hard or soft it is, that's a foul.
Right.
So for me, I probably would have taken that one off the board.
Okay. Let me do this in a way that won't get me absolutely destroyed by our Manchester United loving listeners, because I do want to be fair. If Ole Gunnar Solskjaer could have drawn up a perfect goal in how he wanted his team to play against Liverpool in this game, that was it. Mm-hmm. Nipping in to win the ball, probably unfairly, most definitely a foul, probably. Breaking down the field with pace and a beautiful ball from Daniel James to find Marcus Rashford in the centre. That's it. That's perfect. In terms of VAR, in terms of the goal itself, Atkinson sees the incident. He's right beside it.
He couldn't be in a better spot.
He does not whistle. The ball breaks. It ends up in the back of the net. He checks because clearly, you know, all goals are reviewed anyway. There's constant invigilation. Why does he not just go to the pitch side screen and have a look? Here's something for you. I heard this on the Second Captain's podcast. Give them their credit. There have been 89 games in this Premier League season so far. There has not been one single referee to go to the pitch side screen and to check out a VAR decision. They've taken everything from above. Now, if you're Martin Atkinson and you're the referee of Manchester United versus Liverpool, what harm is there in going to the sideline, looking at the screen and saying, ah, what's the harm?
I don't know.
And what have they been told by the FA and the Premier League in terms of using VAR? That not a single ref has gone to the screen.
Well, the one thing we know is that the burden of evidence has to be so overwhelming in these situations.
Yeah, by the way, folks, I never for a second, Jurgen Klopp, in his post-match press conference, maybe I was aghast at what he said. He said, oh, I was convinced.
He said it was 100%.
When it went to VAR, it would be overturned. I wasn't for a second. Not for a second. Basically, VAR is not going to re-referee. It has to be a glaring miss that the referees had before VAR will intervene in that manner. And that's why I don't understand why Martin Atkinson didn't have another look. I missed something?
On subjective decisions like these, typically what happens on the field is what's going to stand. The situation.
Well, it's a tackle from behind, it's a foul. Fine. But I never thought for a second it was going to be brought back.
Once he allowed that play to transpire, then it was always going to wind up. At least it was heavily tipped in Manchester United's favor that was going to stand. The other one, the Sadio Mane disallowed goal, I'll be honest, I think this is what VAR is for. I think it was used perfectly. It enforced the rule the way that it is written, and I think that it was the right call was made. It's unfortunate because it would have been an amazing goal.
If there's something imperfect about that particular goal or that ruling. It's the rule itself. It's not the, I mean, he did not attempt to play the ball with his hand. The ball came off his thigh and hit his hand. There was nothing deliberate about it, but it's a handball in the lead up to a goal. Therefore, it cannot be given.
I almost enjoy that rule more.
I know you
because do. Because it doesn't really give us the opportunity to get angry. Like, it just is what it is. There's no gray area. Does the ball touch his hand or arm? Does it lead to, does it help him in some way score a goal? If it's yes, then like, there's nothing to really say about it. I guess you cannot like the rule because you appreciate the gray area, but there's so much gray in the sport. Let's just have a little bit of black and white every once in a while.
Yeah.
Is that okay? Before we move off of this game, JJ, something that Ed Woodward talked about this week was very interesting to me. I don't know if you saw this.
Yes.
He's fighting back.
Oh, he is. He came out punching this week.
Well, there has been a long-standing narrative about the way Manchester United does operate in terms of their player selection and recruitment, that these are not football people making these decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So here's what he said. He said, there's a myth that we have non-football people making football decisions. I think that is insulting to the brilliant people who work on the football side in this club. We've expanded our recruitment department in recent years, and we believe this now runs an efficient and productive way. Player recommendations and decisions are worked on by this department and by the first team manager and his staff, not by senior management. If you take him at his word, then I think there are people out there that maybe have to change their tune.
Yes, but we also know for a fact that the scouting department has not been replenished in the Sir Alex Ferguson era. If anything, large parts of it have been disbanded. The club has been in stasis in terms of the signings it has made. He makes, by the way, a lot of the criticism for Ed Woodward is on the contracts that are handed out to Manchester United players. Is he going to pass off the responsibility for that too? I mean, you look at some of the signings that were made and that were sanctioned. Incredible. So,
he can give them credit for both their successes and their failures. Like, Daniel James looks like he's going to be a great signing. So who gets credit for that?
Leeds United for almost signing him. And putting him on the radar.
He's wearing red now. So, like, do we only? I love, like, the recruitment department only gets credit when things go right. When they go wrong, oh well, it's because United aren't people making football decisions.
Here's the thing as well, and it feeds into a narrative that is now growing about Manchester United out of this game. Where's the successes? What are you talking about successes?
Well, I'm talking about him. I've seen enough to say that I think Daniel James will be a success for
Manchester United. But you don't. It's not Daniel James United FC. It's Manchester United. It's about building a team. I mean, who sanctioned Marcus Rojo? You see his involvement on the last. I mean, if there was one cog in that back three that was going to let you down, you could have put money on it being Rojo, who completely loses Lallana in the build-up to that goal.
I mean, it's still very early, and he's very young, but I think Manchester United supporters feel good about Wan-Bissaka.
The spider, very good. Ashley Young is captain of Manchester United and is still at the club.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's...
Look, no one is saying that they're in a great position,
but I'm just saying
not every one of their signings is a failure.
And can I say something about yesterday's game before we get off it? It reminded me, United fans are now talking about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's tactical nous. And in fairness, he got it right yesterday. He had the two wing-backs pushing up high to kind of nullify Liverpool's attack. But a lot of it was being first to the ball, winning tackles, being compact in defence in the back three. And by the end of the game, you know, United were just defending. It was just good defending.
Mm-hmm.
There's a part of it that reminds me of the Chris Rock sketch where he is he's having a go at the idea of being praised for doing something you're supposed to do.
What you want, a cookie?
Yeah, what you want, a cookie. And that kind of struck me as well. I mean, like you said at the top of the show, if you can't get up for Liverpool at home, if you can't win your tackles, if you can't nip in, like, the energy and the urgency that was there has got to be there in every game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the acid test for United. This was an interesting line from Solskjaer. We're better when we attack quickly. No dilly-dallying. It doesn't have to be a counter-attack. I spoke about it before the game. To take more risks, be braver. It's the right type of football.
What does he mean, we have to attack quickly, but it doesn't have to be a counterattack?
Meaning, if you look at the Newcastle game where they were in possession, Andrew, it was like, sideways pass,
right?
Take a touch, open your hips out, elaborate sideways pass. There was no, like, nobody running to commit one of the Newcastle midfielders, pass it off, get the 1-2, no urgency.
Right. It's like watching a how-to video for, like, novices.
Exactly. Or have you seen, you've seen The Simpsons where everybody wants to go to the soccer game in Springfield and the promotion is amazing. They can't understand why they've never been to a soccer game before. And then they go and it's the most boring effort ever. Halfback passes to center. So, and I agree with him there. He's got to do that. He's got to put more energy into this side. But the narrative now that there was some kind of tactical genius in what he did, he got it right for sure. But the bigger question is, you know, why can't you get it right at St. James's Park?
Yeah, here was Gary Neville on Sky Sports talking about the game.
I think before the game, when we saw the back five, we thought they would be sat deep. We thought they would play on the counter-attack. We didn't think they'd be anywhere near as positive as they were in that back five. I didn't think Wan-Bissaka, I think you mentioned it before the game, but all of you mentioned it, just thought they'd sit really deep, quite static in there, defending. I didn't think the wing-backs would just jump out as quickly as they did, and they did really jump out, and they were a lot more positive, even from the first 5 minutes. And I think Ollie surprised us, and he's been questioned tactically, Ollie, in this last month or so. Can he cut it against the big managers? I thought today he got it absolutely right. You know, the game plan was good, it worked. The goal came from what they've been working on during the week. I think for Liverpool, they'll be thinking, why didn't they get the goal a bit quicker and have another 20 minutes at United? Because United are fragile. If United had conceded 15, 20 minutes earlier, I think Liverpool would have gone on to win that game.
And easier said than done, I guess, they should have scored earlier.
Yeah, but I mean, what Gary is kind of forgetting is that they made no shape at scoring. Like Liverpool, yeah. Diagonal balls into the box, kind of floated balls, nothing passes, couldn't get Firmino into the game. By the way, Liverpool had the most amount of possession against Manchester United at Old Trafford since stats began.
Was it 70%?
It was just shy of that, 69 or something like that. And to do so little with it. You know, the only other one that comes close to it was in 2018 against Mourinho. And Liverpool lost that game 2-1. And they still had that amount of possession. So
interesting. Should we move on? A couple other games to quickly touch on from over the weekend.
Yes, let's.
Manchester City, they take care of business against Crystal Palace. I wonder if there's an interesting kind of dilemma developing there. I've typically felt like the striker is Aguero on that team, but he came off the bench this weekend and Gabriel Jesus got the start and he played really, really well. And it's kind of the performance that I think people have been looking for Jesus to, you know, consistently show that he's capable of doing. And I wonder if he starts to do that for them, like how will playing time break down between those two guys? And will Aguero be okay taking a back seat to Jesus?
Yeah, and there's also the age difference as well. I mean, at some point Aguero's going to start, you know, slowing up. And I think Jesus is probably going to get more opportunities. And also as well, in the way that City like to play, he is that bit more mobile.
But Aguero's coming off one of his best years.
Yeah,
like if he's going to slow down, I feel like we haven't really seen that
yet. I'm only guessing, really. Maybe it's the start of a changing of the guard. By the way, I think it was the second goal. Raheem Sterling scooped pass for David Silva. You know, sometimes I'm not at times City's biggest fan in terms of the way they play. Sometimes I'm, you know, it's a little bit, what was it you called it? And all our supporters, all our listeners wanted to hear you do it again. Bing, bop, boom, bing.
Oh, bing, bong, boom, bing, bong.
Yeah. Which is a tactical.
Pep. It's Pep style.
It's Pep style.
Yeah.
But this was, just to lift the pass over the defender for the volley the other side, just beautiful.
Yeah. Everton pick up an important 3 points in that morale was dangerously low with that club. They needed this.
Yes, this was very, very good. Changes were made. Sigurdsson went to the bench, was dropped, came on and scored a brilliant goal.
Yeah.
Couple of things I will get out of the way before I praise Everton. That West Ham midfield, Noble and Rice, and what was ahead of it, Fernals and Anderson and Lanzini, not at the races. Particularly their attacking triumvirate there. Not at the races. But give Everton their credit. Everton's intensity, Andrew, was their pressing, their ability to win the ball back, was at a different level. We're talking about, you know, again, do you want a cookie? I get it, but not all teams, Marco Silva's teams, haven't played that way.
Right.
They were right up for it. The crowd were right up for it. It was one of those kind of classic days where the Goodison Park fans, they're not in the stands. They're literally on the sidelines screaming. It was very good from Everton, and they should have won by much more.
So I guess we can table that relegation talk for the time being. That was always ridiculous, was it not?
I don't know, man.
Come on.
It was bad. I mean, I've watched them now fairly solidly for a month. It was really, really bad. I think it's worth saying.
They had played 8 games.
I know.
Like,
I know, but some of the
30 games.
Some of the performances were so flat. So flat. But again, it's about week in, week out, bringing that level of urgency and energy. Sometimes,
look, I'm saying they may have an awful season, but for them, that will not end with finishing 18th or worse. It just won't. It can't.
It can for our sakes. We have too many Everton friends.
Tottenham get a dramatic draw, but...
Dramatic draw. But I had to turn that game off at halftime. It was brutal. Absolutely brutal.
I was not even really mad at the end. It's just become like... It's funny how a new normal can develop so quickly in your mind. Human beings are very adaptable creatures. I've always said that about us as a people and a species.
And you have adapted to just this palsy, this malaise.
Yeah, malaise. An unbelievable... Even the goal that they scored, I think that the right call ultimately was made. It was certainly close as to whether or not Dele Alli used his arm or like the top... Like this here, JJ, is this a handball or is this not?
Where you're pointed to?
Yeah.
Below the crease of the shirt.
Right, right.
Oh, it's a handball. Sorry.
It was very close then. I don't know. And even VAR wasn't sure. Did you see what happened?
Ugh.
On the screen it said no goal, but the referee's pointing to the center circle for a goal. They didn't even know what was going
on. By the way, let's talk about Alderweireld's tackle on De La Feu in the first half. Mm-hmm. No VAR review, no nothing. I mean, that could easily have been a penalty.
I thought it was.
Yeah.
I thought it was. I don't know what to say about them anymore. There's no reason for me to continue to say the same things. It's the same stuff every week. They're not creating opportunities. They're not getting chances.
Did you not think... Let's talk about something off the field because they're just horrible to watch as well. Did you not think it very curious, Maurizio Pochettino's comments last week, we're fighting against ourselves. The main battle is not against the opponent. It's against ourselves. I was kind of revealing as to what's going on behind the scenes.
Revealing, maybe. Surprising, no. Like, that's
not surprising, but well, surprising that he would speak that way in the lead up.
He's always been pretty honest in his assessment.
He's been super honest.
Well, what was the other thing he said last week? He also said something last week that was equally interesting in talking, I guess, about how his players still are responding to him. That he said that they invited him to dinner.
Yeah,
as a show of. I guess that, you know, typically you wouldn't invite someone to dinner that you can't stand the sight of.
Hmm.
This is all, how did we get here so quickly?
Can I?
On that one day, like the fact that Amazon is doing this behind the scenes documentary of Tottenham is unbelievable because whether you hate Spurs or love Spurs, everyone has to be at least a little bit interested in this plummet.
Dude, they best not turn this into a PR stunt. This has got to be warts and all with the season we've seen. If this turns out to be some kind of like, ooh, you know, plenty of shots, slow motion shots of guys working hard in training, and that's all we get.
No. Then don't release it. Because this has been the most, like...
They are sanitized, those all or nothings. We know that.
Well, how are you going to sanitize this? by the way, there are rumors of things that you and I have not even mentioned on this podcast, because I feel uncomfortable doing it, of things going on behind the scenes there that, like...
No, but they were dispelled by both players involved.
Yeah, but, like, are things like that... Are they going to be addressed? Like, are the players going to have to, like, go on camera and with Amazon people doing this documentary and talk about
come
stuff?
Come on, we're very Daily Mirror here.
I'm just saying, these are... The players have had to talk about it. Like...
So I had a vision over the weekend when they announced that Amazon were doing this. Mm-hmm. So before the Champions League final, Maurizio Pochettino was talking to, I can't remember who it was, maybe BT Sport. And it was a very informal, hey, you know, you're a manager going into a Champions League final. Tell us about your career and your superstitions. And on his desk, he has a bowl of lemons. What's the bowl of lemons for?
We've talked about this.
Pochettino. Yeah. And he says, oh, it's to suck in negative energy. And he said he made a joke how it's only when Daniel Levy comes in that the lemons go to work. big joke, ha 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 ha. I just have him, I imagine him in the room now, and his office is just boxes of lemons.
Mauricio, what is this swimming pool of lemons for? Let's see, JJ, we continue now. Leicester City, they defeat Burnley 2-1.
Yeah.
And I keep, I think the world of this Leicester team, and they sort of validated in that, not necessarily that they beat Burnley, but, you know, I feel like with Leicester, there's never any hanging of the heads. They go down against Burnley relatively early on, like 26 minute or whatever it was. And, like, I don't know, right now you just have this feel about them that, like, okay, well, they'll find a way. Sure, it's Burnley and they can be difficult to break down, but, like, I feel like everyone in that club right now just believes we'll find a way through, and they do, and they come back and they win 2-1.
Yeah, and that's a you know, it's a tricky tie for anybody, really. There's a surprising statistic about Leicester, though, and creating chances, that they are not where they should be for a team of their capabilities in terms of creating the really good clear-cut chances. And that surprised me. They're quite low in that table, actually.
That would surprise me quite a bit, actually. I feel like guys like James Maddison and Yuri Tielemans are pretty much known for stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is interesting. And last but not least here, JJ, Chelsea win and Christian Pulisic plays. By the way, the Pulisic jersey contest is still a thing.
That's still happening. We didn't think it would take quite this long, but, you know, so what?
No, maybe. I don't know. It's not that. We're still early
games.
In the season.
9 games. Yeah.
So should we remind people even how this works?
Yeah, you give us the minute and the game when you think Christian Pulisic is going to score, and you must put the hashtag #CaughtOffsidePulisic. Mm-hmm. If there's no hashtag, it doesn't work. You only get one entry per game. Get to it.
There you go. So that is still hanging out there.
It's a beautiful jersey. Oh.
Yeah, I guess we should also remind people, though, that it is a Borussia Dortmund jersey.
Yeah, there was no way we were giving away a Chelsea jersey. There's far too many people.
We are supposed to be unbiased.
No, but, like, generally, we've got a broad listenership who support different teams. Well, Borussia Dortmund
should have been a U.S. jersey, quite frankly.
Yeah, but, I mean, anyone can get that. I feel this is a bit more...
Anyone can get... could have gotten this, too. What are you talking about?
I suppose. Maybe.
You're getting defensive because it was your call.
It was my idea.
Yeah. And you went for it in the way that you did. And you hate dissension. And so you're a tyrant, the way that you ruled this.
Classicfootballshirts.co.uk is the place to go for those kind of niche jerseys.
By the way, not to go off of the Chelsea game, they beat Newcastle. I don't know how much, like, if you got a ton more you want to say about it. DeAndre Yedlin kind of spoiled a possible Christian Pulisic moment, which was sort of funny.
Yeah, he centered to Tammy Abraham. And Abraham just has to roll it in, really. And it's a brilliant play by Yedlin to get round the side and to read the danger. And, of course, that made me pause and think, why couldn't you have read the danger in Toronto? But anyway, yeah, he nipped in round, stopped it. Pulisic played on the right-hand side, tucked in a little bit, which I love. Mm-hmm. His last start for Chelsea in the league, I believe, came against Sheffield United at the end of August. And he was... really hugging the touchline. And I just didn't like it.
No, he's more dangerous closer to
goal. Just tucked in a little bit. And look, he looked really, really good. There's no two ways about it. And again, you know, those who have been hanging their heads over the performance against Canada, you look at where he operates for Chelsea versus what he has to do and where he has to collect the ball for the US men's national team. It's not surprising.
Now, last week on the podcast, we did a lot about the U.S. men in the wake of having lost to Canada. So if you want more thoughts on that, I would suggest that you download and listen to that podcast. But we didn't have a chance to react to something Craig Burley said because that happened after we recorded.
Yeah.
And with Pulisic and Yedlin both taking part in this game, I thought this would be as good a moment as any to go back and listen to this. Now, it's kind of long, so just hang with it. But this is Craig Burley basically on the state of U.S. men's soccer and the way that it's perceived.
I've never covered a national team with as much bull spoken as the U.S. I really haven't. This is a team who the average soccer fan or a nation, this soccer nation, has been led to believe by people who analyse the game here that they're better than what they are. And then when results turn badly, they're gobsmacked by the performances because they've been led to believe that they're in a better position than they clearly are. This, you know, the things we know, Darkness follows daylight, the earth is round, and the US are not a very good team. They're a blimp and have been for a long time at the horizon of the global game. But every weekend, we have to sit and listen to people talking about Pulisic as if he's the second coming of Messi. And this guy playing in the Bundesliga, and this guy. And it's like, the world's going to crash if these guys are not playing at the football club. Because they're the greatest thing since sliced bread. Well, you know what? And I don't have anything against Pulisic or any American soccer player or any player. But it has hit home hard to a lot of people just where they are in the standing of the game at the moment. There should be a realisation amongst American soccer fans about their place in the game right now. That's where they are at the moment.
So this is what I would say to that. And I say this, you know how much I love Craig.
Oh, my God.
Like, literally like our favorite guest to have on this show. Here's why I mostly disagree, actually, with what he said there. Now, I say this under the pretense that you and I have acknowledged that there is a fair amount of this that had to be done among U.S. fans, that there can certainly be an inflated opinion of this U.S. men's soccer team among the fan base, for sure. But here's what I would say to Craig. Like, I've watched this team my whole life, all right? We are in a moment in time that is uniquely different than what I grew up with U.S. soccer, and that is what is only a few years old of U.S. men's soccer, and that is losing to teams like Canada and losing to teams in the previous round of qualifying for the World Cup like Guatemala, and in a must-win game against Trinidad, a team that the U.S. typically has no problem beating, losing that game. Like, this is different. We're not asking the U.S. to suddenly go to Europe and start beating England or go to South America and beat Brazil. We're not even necessarily asking them when they play Mexico. Like, yeah, we think those are games we can win, but I'm not hearing people scream, fire them all after a loss to Mexico. We're asking them to beat Canada.
Yeah.
All right. A thing that hadn't happened. Canada hadn't beaten the U.S. in 35 years. Canada hadn't scored a goal against the U.S. since 2007. Like, I think U.S. fans are allowed to witness a performance like that against that Canadian team who, while not bad, like, that is certainly jarring for an American fan to see the U.S. men play that badly against that opponent. I don't care if it's in the U.S. or Canada. So that's what I would say to that. And as for the Pulisic comment, I actually mostly agree with Craig on that. But the only thing that I would say in defense of American soccer fans is it's not just us propping up Pulisic. Now, we see him a lot from his time playing with the U.S., so we hold him in a certain regard. But when we see him get sold to Chelsea for $73 million, that is a form of validation to us. Okay, it's not just us that thinks he's good. Chelsea are willing to spend that much money. In terms of outfield players, I think only Alvaro Morata costs more for Chelsea. He's the second most. So Kepa was, the most that they've spent. But he's basically the third most expensive player in Chelsea history. Like, for a club that has been known to spend a lot of money on players. So when we see that, like, I can't help but feel validated in my opinions of Christian Pulisic. So, yeah, like, he's a 20-year-old kid, and Frank Lampard is under no obligation to be playing him week in, week out. But he's not just some random player. Like, he is, like, for Chelsea to value him that way, somebody there saw him as a potentially great player. So to see him not playing, to not even be on the bench for games, like, that is also jarring for an American fan to see.
Also, U.S. soccer fans are looking at Northern Ireland. They're looking at Finland. They're looking at other teams that are punching above their weight and qualifying for tournaments and being competitive against good sides. And we look at the big thing that came up. I posted that video to our Instagram and people arguing about the talent pool. I don't think we have the strongest talent pool in the world. We have a talent pool from which we should be doing much better. Most US fans want the team to be organized, want the best players playing that are doing best for their clubs and in the best positions. That's not too much to ask for. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is Canada, for all they were with their Alphonso Davies, who's an excellent player, that was mainly an MLS team. Right?
Mm-hmm.
We should be able to compete against them. And we weren't competitive against them. Their midfielder is Scott Arfield, who is in his 30s and is playing for Glasgow Rangers. We've got players playing at a higher level and we couldn't compete. That's the argument. It's not us thinking that, hey, we consider ourselves as good as Mexico or you know, Holland.
No, we all know that. Right.
Yeah, right.
But we're talking about these games.
The level that Craig is arguing at there is a false level. Nobody's talking about that.
Right.
Well, I'm talking about the fact that we can go to Honduras, pass the ball, and win a game. And right now, we can't do that. That these are the arguments.
Right. Like, U.S. fans were not... We were not crazy for thinking we should have been good enough to qualify for the last World Cup. Like,
no.
That, you can't look at that and say, oh, well, like, you guys just have a totally... You've been misled. You have a totally false opinion of yourselves. You know, like, this team should have been good enough to be able to get that done. And it was a major disappointment that they couldn't. So... I get what he's saying. There are certainly people over here that get stuck in the U.S. bubble.
Yeah.
There's no question about that. But I don't think people are being overly ridiculous in being as disappointed as they were with that showing.
There's standards and there's standards, and we're not up to where we should be for what we are.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, we'll take a very quick break. When we come back, we have to address what went on over the weekend in MLS because it was an unbelievably memorable weekend. Don't go anywhere.
He'll swing this ball in front. Tracking free. Header's a goal. Acosta got it in. It's 3-all. Rodriguez able to find Rui Diaz in the swing and a miss. It almost fell free for Morris. Rui Diaz a second time. Single to block. Morris the header. It bounces in.
It's into the front post. It's blasted on Ariola.
Is back on the ball, drives it across, header, goal, it's tied! Pico, save! Robles, spectacular save of the game. Javier, a deflected ball, goal! That's it, that is Philadelphia's signature moment, their first playoff win.
Oh my God, what a weekend, what an incredible weekend of MLS playoff action. Oh, JJ, where to even begin? I guess we'll just go through this chronologically in the order that they happen. Yeah. Some of these we'll go through quicker than others. First off, Atlanta United FC 1, New England 0. It was a 70th-minute goal for Atlanta that gets them through.
Andrew, I'll tell you something. The Revs were very, very good in this game. They could have taken this extra time quite easily, I think. They probably ran out of steam a little bit, and Barco's pass to Escobar for the goal was just... sublime.
Yeah.
What a weighted pass. And considering that surface makes every pass faster, the turf at Mercedes-Benz Arena, but this was just perfectly weighted. A great goal. But Bruce Arena is going to look back and he's not going to be critical of Bunbury, but Bunbury had a chance. The ball just wouldn't come down for him and he had this weak header, but it was just him and the goal and Brad Guzan. If that goes in, I think they could have seen it out. Because that's at 0-0 and won the game. It's the change in the Revs since Brucey's come in.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that before we moved off this game. I do wonder how his season will be remembered.
I
would hope so. I hope
dignity is what they've taken. They were a shambles. The things we were hearing about coming out of New England was, I was almost thinking, why would they even bother playing their next game? Everything is rubbish right now. Mm-hmm. That turnaround, the run they went on initially... And to be in the playoffs and be competitive against somebody like Atlanta away from home, he deserves tremendous credit. And I know nobody who listens to this podcast wants to hear me do that.
It's not cool to like him. All right. You have to understand that.
I like what he's done here. I'm judging everything on its merits. Well, but you're not allowed to do that.
No, it's not cool. Let's see. The Sounders 4, FC Dallas 3. What an unbelievable game this was. And I do want to say this about Jordan Morris. Look, his performance was heroic. A hat trick, including the winning goal for them.
He scored the winning goal when he was injured, it looked.
On a header smartly, like, headed down into the ground to make it even more difficult.
What was Reggie Cannon doing?
I don't know. But, like, for Jordan Morris, it's been an interesting week because, first off, we didn't even talk about Cuba, like, because that felt so insignificant. But he played well there. And then in Canada, like, everybody... for the most part, played poorly in that game for the U.S. But there was a segment of fans, I think, and media who watched that game that thought, well, If I had to pick somebody out of that game that looked decent, it would have been Jordan Morris.
How dare you? This segment. You won't even name me. Say my
segment
name.
Segment of people.
Say my name.
Nameless, faceless individuals.
You're a disgrace. I actually said there was a brief period in that game where Jordan Morris looked like he could do something.
So Jordan Morris had to kind of sit there during the week, even though in his head he probably was thinking, you know, I wasn't as bad as those guys. Like, I don't like hearing the things that are
better
being
than
said,
them.
But like, I don't like what's being said about me being lumped in with what went on there. And so he had to take that, and you could tell his performance for Seattle. He was, I mean, you talk about a man of the match performance. He basically dragged them through to the next round. It was an incredible showing by him. What a game.
It certainly was. And, you know, there was drama right to the very end. FC Dallas are incensed over the fact that there wasn't a VAR review on a potential handball, although I don't know. And that was right at the death. I don't know whether it was or not, but yeah, really exciting game.
And, you know, also with that game too, like, the one thing that is fun about the postseason that I really think you have to like it, and in leagues that don't have postseason, sometimes you miss out on this, like the intensity of what's at stake ratchets up so quickly. And so fights just like become almost routine. And you saw Jesse Gonzalez go after, it was Nuhu who had come on as a sub. And Jesse Gonzalez, after, you know, like a tough challenge in midfield,
ran 40 yards
to then on a yellow card already himself,
to put his hands on Nuhu's neck or close to it, and then Nuhu reacts pretty tamely to a guy putting hands on you, and Gonzalez falls to the ground like he's been taken out with a sniper. It wasn't a good look for him.
I thought it was a terrible look for Gonzalez. It was, first off, it was just cheap in the way I thought he went about it, and second of all, like, it was pretty reckless in that, okay, it happened in like the 114th minute, I think it was, and they're down a goal. But who's to, like, Dallas could easily, not easily, but Dallas could have gotten that goal back, tied it at 4-4. And if Gonzalez, if the referee saw any of this, and if he was maybe a little more willing to show a card there, I don't think he wanted to play that role.
He didn't. He didn't
give anybody a card.
Dude, he waited so long.
I think he just
pulled the two guys aside and, like, dogged both of them.
I'm generally okay with a referee in the postseason allowing the players to play the games and being willing to put up with some of the, like, the nonsense that comes
that
with
was
just the intensity.
Total
nonsense. Jesse Gonzalez could have easily gotten a yellow card there. What he did was, it was a yellow card offense that the referee just decided not to hand out. Like, if Dallas scores a goal, now you've got no key. Like, who's goalkeeper for FC Dallas at that point? So, like,
I think actually my girlfriend said watching the game, I think all their subs are used.
They were.
That would have been hilarious.
Yeah. So, like, your season could have been on the line there, and now you're off because of some reckless action.
But how, also, as well, it just shows, and look, I've been involved in them myself, obviously not at that level, but, like, what are you hoping to gain? What is the best case scenario?
He wants Nuhu sent off.
When you run 40 yards. Yeah, I know. But
that's what he wants.
But it was pathetic. Like, no, the referee was right there. There's no way he could have given it.
So Seattle, oh my gosh. Well, that was just such an exhilarating game. And so they march on to the next round. Toronto FC 5, DC United 1. If you didn't watch this game, you would think, I didn't miss much.
Hammering.
Well, 4 of those goals occurred in the first half of extra time. Unbelievable the way regulation ended with Lucas Rodriguez getting a 93rd minute equalizer, and then Toronto. I guess this comes down partially to just maybe DC United expelling all of their effort to get that goal, to send it to extra time, and then it's kind of just, let's pray we can see this through to penalties. And Toronto, just the onslaught, it just like snowballed so quickly in those first 15 minutes of extra time.
Yeah, it's a pretty sad way for Wayne Rooney to say goodbye to MLS. I'm kind of wondering what his legacy is going to be now.
Well, I think for this season, I think it would have to be a disappointment that DC United didn't wind up being better than they were.
Yeah.
Especially once Luciano Acosta's, remember his transfer to PSG we all thought was done. And then when he came back, when it wound up falling through, it was like, oh, well, they're going to keep these two intact? I mean, it really felt like they had a chance to kick on and be one of the best teams
in
the East. And they didn't. No. I mean, to come out of it as the 5 seed,
but I think
it was a big disappointment.
I think generally, though, Rooney's been good for DC United.
Well, his first year there, I mean, in like half a season, he was among the best players in the league and was a legitimate MVP candidate.
Yeah, which was incredible.
Yeah.
You wonder what kind of pair Derby are going to get.
Is he going to play? Like, he's player manager, right?
No, he's going to
He's
going to move into management. He's going to be doing his coaching as he goes, but he's going to be registered as a player.
One other thing, I do want to talk about Toronto for a sec. This had to be a nerve-wracking fixture for them, just because we all knew even though, like we're saying, DC United maybe fell short of expectations this season, we all know what was there potentially. And if they were one of these teams that are like, let's just get to the playoffs and then let's kick on. So there's that hanging in the background, along with Toronto having been without Jozy Altidore and Omar Gonzalez for this game. For Toronto, it was, again, it was closer than the scoreline indicates. But for them to get out of their 5-1 winners, I think that's a big boost heading into the conference semis.
Yeah, and you know, Toronto, recent history, facing NYCFC, they're not going to fear them at all, Andrew. Not really.
No, we'll talk about that and what to watch for in just a sec. JJ, Real Salt Lake and Portland Timbers, 2-1. It goes to Real Salt Lake. More drama. 87th minute winner for Real as Portland are out.
Hugely disappointed for Portland and Giovanni Savarese and Real Salt Lake. Just, I think it's the most, if you look at the revs and you look at Real Salt Lake seasons, those were the big turnarounds. And for them to win a first round playoff game is just huge. Nobody saw that coming.
And then JJ, the Philadelphia Union and New York Red Bulls, 4-3. It's the Union who win it in extra time. They come back from 2 goals down. When New York...
Twice.
Yeah. When New York got the goal in the 4th minute of first half added time, you just looked at that and thought, what a gut punch. Like, you felt like Philly was fighting back, getting, they had controlled the run of play. It was just such a brutal blow.
Is a gut punch still a gut punch when you know it's coming? You know what I mean?
You felt like that was coming?
Sorry, that ball was kicked. The Red Bulls were all over Philadelphia in terms of just put the ball in the box. Andre Blake is having a mare.
Oh my God.
And he produced again. The 3 goals that the Red Bulls scored, and I don't want to take the juice out of this game because it was a fun game, but the 3 goals the Red Bulls scored were all his errors. The first one, Sims' goal, he pulls his hands away from the ball. I don't know what he's doing. It was the strangest thing. The second one, he comes for a cross. He's nowhere there. He's on his back as it trickles over the line. And the third goal, right in stoppage time at the end of the first half, comes again, clatters into his defender, gets nowhere near it, and it's just rolled home.
It was shocking. Now, I say shocking. He did not have a good season. For a guy that we typically hold in high regard, he had a bad
year. I've never held him in high regard.
Never. What are you doing today? Oh, Philadelphia Union, first sellout ever. Oh, Andre Blake, never been good. You know, they won this game.
Yeah, I know.
You animal.
Wow.
This game was unbelievable. The fight back, and I think for all the... It's the perfect combination of teams who have been playing each other for this to happen, because the Union did this to the Red Bulls earlier this season when they came back from 2 goals down in Chester to beat New York.
Yeah.
So for the situation to replicate itself in the postseason, I'm guessing the guys on that Philadelphia team thought, we've done it before. We can do this again. And maybe that seed of doubt was in New York's minds. They've done this to us before. Maybe they got nervous in that game. I don't know.
I've got another hot take here. I've got two more hot takes. Actually, no. My other hot take is kind of mean. I was going to say Jim Curtin may have to drop Andre Blake for the next game. Such was the nature of the performance.
That is actually not crazy.
Okay, but whatever. The winning goal. I know it took a deflection, but he was meaning not... He obviously didn't mean to put that amount of whip and loop on it, but he was meaning to chip it and dink it to the far post.
Oh, I don't think he was. I thought that was a cross for sure.
You think so?
Definitely.
I think he was playing him with
all
the
right,
eyes.
We'll go with that.
I don't know. I mean, it doesn't matter because it took such a wicked deflection that it changes everything.
That was crazy.
For
all the chances Philadelphia had, like, first of all, the save that Luis Robles made at the end of regulation, how did the Union not score there? I mean, it was just one chance after chance after chance. And for that to have been the goal that they wanted on, like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I want to give Jim Curtin credit, bringing on El Seno. El Seno was unbelievable after coming on as a sub. He just took the game over.
Jim Curtin is such a nice man as well.
Yeah.
Like, he's a really good guy. And you think how many times in the past, two years now since he's been installed, he came in as a caretaker manager. How many times has he been kind of, oh, well.
Feels like his managerial tenure has been on life support once or twice.
He's going to be moved on.
Now here he is kind of authoring what I think a lot of Union fans would look at as the greatest moment in their franchise's history.
So a listener of ours, Ali, was at the game and she sent us a video. The place was absolutely rocking.
Right.
Atmosphere was really great.
Yeah.
Even afterwards, lots of people stayed to cheer the team on and cheer them off the field. look, nice buzz down there right now, and they deserved it.
Let's see, Minnesota United FC and LA Galaxy. Minnesota, they wind up this weekend being the only home team to not advance. 2-1, it goes to the Galaxy, and it's kind of four bad minutes for Minnesota that will define their season, I suppose.
Yes, and are we including in those 4 minutes the moment that, to me, changes the game? The cross comes in from the right-hand side, and Rodriguez, it's a point-blank header. You've got to score. It was at 0-0 at that point. That puts them 1-0 up, and he doesn't score, and that's it. Opportunity gone.
Yeah. We'll talk a little bit. Well, for Minnesota United FC, I guess, like, not quite to the extent of New England. Totally different situations with how their seasons went. But I think for Minnesota, this will be bitterly disappointing because they did get so close to taking down Zlatan in the postseason. But in the end, this, like, what a great year for them, and a great year for them to continue to build on, right down to the fact that the new stadium was just, like, what a fun place to watch a game. The crowds have been amazing. This was an important year in the development of that club,
and
for sure.
In fairness, their worst fears about the pitch didn't really come true. The pitch was relayed, and talk about scheduling. There was a college football game on it the night before. It held up nicely, though. It looked fairly solid. Looked like the drainage issues have been solved. Adrian Heath also, you know, to get this team to have a good season, get into the playoffs and be competitive. It's not easy when you first come in as a new team into MLS, and they've, unless you're Atlanta, and they turned it around really, really quickly. And look, the big, I think, bone of contention was, why was Darren Quintero, I mean, I know he hasn't been a regular starter during the season. He has really only 10 goals for the season, but like, the fans, when
he came on, they went
crazy. Chanted his name.
Yeah,
I mean, I wonder what's going on there. He looked kind of all wrapped up and bundled up on the sideline, and didn't look happy to be not featuring in the biggest game of the season. But again, I would say the same thing happened at Atlanta. Pity Martinez, you know, wasn't
not starting. You're right.
Not starting. And I guess managers are just like, okay, these guys may be stars. In Pity Martinez's case, he's the most expensive MLS player of all time. And look, Ronald DeBoer said, or Frank DeBoer said, I'll do whatever I want.
Quickly, before we get out, we'll do a super fast what to watch for, because Champions League is Tuesday and Wednesday this week. We'll be back later in the week with a recap of that. I guess the big games, JJ, Tottenham and Red Star Belgrade. This is the one for Tottenham. Just they cannot lose that game, right? This was the one that, when Champions League schedules and groups were announced, like, if there was one game that you could put up the 3 points for, you would think it would be that one. Please. Maybe I feel like I'm, like, pleading with myself.
Yeah, you really are.
Yeah.
It's at home to Red Star. It looks like it should be 3 points. It's nothing of the sort. It's not a banker anymore for Spurs.
No, absolutely not. Tuesday, also 3 o'clock, Manchester City and Atalanta. I saw Pep said that Man City make too many mistakes to win the Champions League. I'm sure these are more just kind of Pep mind games.
Yeah, and he also...
they are good enough to win the Champions
League. He also said we're not
going
to become more defensive to try and do that. We're going to stick to our principles. All Pep stuff.
Yep. Wednesday, 12:55, Ajax and Chelsea. I think for the neutral, that is probably one of the more intriguing games of the week for me.
Yeah. Young, youthful team that passes the ball. And Chelsea. No. Both teams are actually moved the ball nicely. That could be a fun one.
Yeah. Wednesday, 3 o'clock, Inter and Borussia Dortmund. Wednesday, also 3 o'clock, Genk and Liverpool. And Slavia Prague, Barcelona. That's also Wednesday at 3. MLS Conference semifinals. Quickly now, Wednesday, 7 o'clock, NYCFC and Toronto FC. A little bit of history here. They met in 2016, and it was an utter disaster for NYCFC. 7-0. It was 5-0 just in the Yankee Stadium leg.
Wasn't it 5 at halftime or something, or 4 at halftime?
It was horrifying.
Horrific. Jozy Altidore had a night.
And this will be at Citi Field.
Again.
Sucks. It sucks. It bothers me that that's the thing that's happening.
But that's just the way it is.
I know.
Do we need to go into zoning and the zoning laws in New York City?
Wednesday, 10 o'clock p.m., Seattle Sounders, Real Salt Lake. Thursday, 8 p.m., Atlanta United FC and Philadelphia Union. Remember, when these teams met not that long ago, this was the game, JJ, that I said before it happened was the biggest game in the history of the Philadelphia Union, and they won that 3-1. So we'll see if they come out with a similar gusto for that one. Thursday, 10:30, LAFC and the LA Galaxy.
El Trafico.
Oh, my God.
Look, you can't convince me that Bob Bradley wanted any part of this. You cannot. And it's happening.
By the way, the Galaxy know that. Zlatan basically came out and said it. He said they're afraid to face us. And Sebastian Legette was kind of asked about that comment, and he said, I think history shows that. Like, the Galaxy know that they are in LAFC's heads.
For sure. Absolutely. And, yeah, I just...
kind of bummed that's at 10:30 Eastern time.
What do you, want to change time zones? What would you want to do?
Just a little bit late for such a high-profile game.
I hear you, but we're all going to be watching.
Yeah, you have to.
You really do. And there'll be goals, there'll be drama, and LA Galaxy will probably shade it.
LAFC have never beaten the Galaxy. 5 meetings, 2 losses, 3 draws.
They're getting closer.
Oh, man. Can you, like... if LAFC, this is one that will live with them forever if they can't find a way to win this game.
Oh, look, there's no excuses now. Yeah. Put up or shut up.
And finally, JJ, like I said, we're going to have another podcast later in the week to address more stuff coming up over the weekend. But I did want to at least mention that the NWSL final is set. Semifinals were this past weekend. The final is going to be Sunday at 3:30. And it's the North Carolina Courage, who we thought would get through, and they did so with relative ease.
Yes.
Against the Chicago Red Stars, who got by 1-0. And of course, who else would it be but Sam Kerr scoring the goal?
Yeah, and she could have added another one late on as well in that game. Yeah, I don't want to, because you've got so many goals in that Chicago team, I don't want to call it. It's going to be a very interesting game. Should be a good final.
Yeah. Before we get out, there's one thing I want to tell you about, JJ. I forgot about this. New sponsor with the program. I know you're very excited.
Oh, wow. Go on.
Yeah. Now, I have to start out by saying this, that these statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. All right? So now that's all out there. But I want to tell you this. Did you know that your skin, hair, nails, and connective tissue are all made from collagen?
Yes.
And generally... oh, you did?
It's basic science. Go on.
Okay. Well, and generally speaking, once you turn 30, your body naturally slows in its production of collagen. A standard modern diet typically won't help either, since it often lacks in collagen. That's why collagen supplementation is so popular in the wellness and beauty community, and why Ancient Nutrition created Multi-Collagen Protein. Ancient Nutrition's Multi-Collagen Protein supports healthy skin, joint health, a healthy gut, and healthy nails. Plus, instead of 1 to 2 collagen types, Ancient Nutrition's Multi-Collagen Protein features 5 collagen types.
You know who's into collagen?
No, tell me.
Kenneth, yoga instructor.
Don't do that.
Yep.
Not now.
Okay, sorry.
That got reaction.
Really did.
People are like invested in what happens with Kenneth.
Our little telenovela.
It's simply a flavorless powder you can take in a glass of water or your coffee, made from 4 food sources: beef, chicken, fish, and eggshell membrane, all from non-GMO, grass-fed, cage-free, and cruelty-free sources. It contains 9 grams of protein and 0 grams of carbs or fat. There are a lot of options out there, especially as collagen is, quote-unquote, trending. So stick with Ancient Nutrition's Multi-Collagen Protein. This one, Multi-Collagen the one Multi-Collagen praised by Better Nutrition, Women's Health, and many more. Get $10 off right now at ancientnutrition.com using the promo code OFFSIDE. That's a special offer for our listeners and a simple way to support our show. Get $10 off at ancientnutrition.com. Just use the promo code OFFSIDE, OFFSIDE, ancientnutrition.com, promo code OFFSIDE. There you go. Ancient Nutrition, welcome aboard.
Welcome aboard, guys. Yeah. One more thing. Boca Juniors, River Plate, Copa Libertadores, second leg tomorrow, 8:30, River leading 2-0. And Flamengo and Gremio, 1-1 from the first leg on Wednesday at 8:30.
There you go. We will be back later in the week with a Champions League recap and who knows what else there will be. By the time we do the show, MLS Wednesday night games will have happened. I don't know about Thursday night. Yeah. We'll have to see.
It's going
to
be fun, though.
It's all a very fluid situation. Hey, this was fun, man. To you, I say...
take you later, fun boy.
I'll see you.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.